Or maybe it won't tell us that we've gone live. I think we're live now. Hello. Hello and welcome to Curiosity Conversations with me, Scott Drummond. It's February, a new month, and that means a new topic that I'm diving deep into. And February's topic is a bit different. It's death. And today joining me to talk about it is Kate. So Kate recently wrote something to mark the one-year anniversary of the passing of her dad. And what she wrote resonated so much with me. So I just wanted to read that first and then welcome Kate. Here's what Kate wrote. It's been a year of the deepest heartache, shock and disbelief. And muddled in amongst the tears and pain has also been a more authentic connection with friends and family, a growing sense of purpose, and a year I learned so much about resilience, how it's possible to come through the darkest of times and find the flickers of light in the shadowy depths of grief. Kate, welcome.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for having me.
What you wrote, Kate, I think, you know, resonated so much with me because it has both sides of what I've come to kind of experience in my own, I guess you'd call it a journey with grief. My mum passed away 12 years ago. Both senses of like continuing bewilderment and struggle to some extent. And then also, mm-hmm. you know, a sort of sharpening of the senses, a focusing of the aliveness in my life as a result of it. So thank you for what you wrote. I think it perfectly kind of speaks to the difficulty and the gifts that maybe sit somewhere within this thing called grief.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just interesting that we're at, you know, very different stages, I suppose. I lost my dad just over a year ago and you lost your mum 12 years ago. And yet, you know, there's still similarity in that experience, no matter where you are on that timeline.
Yeah. And you know, I'm sure you've heard it in the last year, and I've certainly heard it a lot recently and over the last 12 years, which is there is no one path through grief. There's no kind of, you know, for all the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross steps to go through of denial and bargaining and the rest of it, and grief feels a very personal journey.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's personal, given the fact that we are all completely unique individuals and we experience things in our own unique way. And then secondly, there's the relationship with the person that we've lost and, you know, everything that that meant. And then there's, you know, the kind of logistics of how it happens, you know, like whether it's a death after a period of illness or something that we have time to adjust to and to almost come to expect, I use that word sort of in inverted commas, versus, you know, when it happens very suddenly, they're there one minute and gone the next. So for all of those reasons, and I'm sure there's more, it's a completely unique and personal experience. But yet there are some commonalities as well. So it's it's a fascinating topic, and it's something that I've obviously come to learn more about over the last year. I think I've lost grandparents in the past, and I think they sort of, you know, obviously it was sad and I grieved for them and I still grieve for them and I still think about them and talk about them a lot, but it was almost like I felt they'd had their time and they'd all had, you know, rich and fulfilling lives, and it was their time to sort of to go. And I have a very different sense of that with my dad. You know, he wanted to live and he was looking forward to life and he was planning the next stages and trying to protect his health and all of that sort of thing. And so I feel for him there is a sense that he was robbed. And you know, to refer back to the five stages of grief that you just mentioned, you know, I have experienced, you know, the first one around shock and disbelief, and it progresses mm-hmm. on to anger. And my experience of that process has been one of, it's not a linear one. So you don't go neatly mm-hmm. from one stage into the next. There's very much a kind of sliding up and down the scale that happens. You know, and you can think you've moved through the anger stage, but actually, you know, it comes, and you might have even feeling some level of acceptance, and I have felt that at some points over the last year, but then I've also then slipped back, you know, into the anger stages. So it's a very fluid process, and I, you know, like you say, there's no one way of experiencing it.
Yeah, that really resonates as well. The there's this sort of victories along the way. There's times when the grief feels very manageable, or even feels welcome. You know, it's just connection, I guess, at that time. And then there's other times where the anger I feel towards, in my case, it's towards multiple sclerosis. Mum had MS for 20 years before she passed away, and my anger is really kind of, I guess one of the reasons it's been difficult to process the anger is it's very much directed at this thing, this disease. I've had some success getting into dialogue with the disease in journaling and things like that. But it, you know, the anger is still there. And my sense is each of these stages, whether it be acceptance or you know, shock and disbelief or anger, they aren't kind of towns to pass through and never to revisit. They're just new, they're just a set of new relationships that we have. The new relationship for me with anger, you know, and in some ways, one of the things that I like to talk about that has been a gift of grief has been, I've been forced to kind of turn to anger. I've been forced to confront my own anger and work with that anger. And then this didn't happen straight away. In the beginning, I was just really angry and probably poured that anger into all sorts of unhealthy channels. But over time, I've just had to come to terms with that anger. And that doesn't mean making the anger go away. It means developing a new relationship with this part of me, which is now angry. And so one of the has been, I guess, turning towards those parts of me that are still struggling to come to terms with it and learning more about myself.
And I love, well, what you're making me think about there and what you've just said is that there's a need for acceptance, right, of everything that grief throws up, and a need to kind of explore it and be with it. And I think this is one of the biggest gifts that I've felt through going through this, which is it's really tested my ability to just be with emotion, be with pain, be with discomfort. Like, it's not a nice, it's not a very nice feeling. I've felt it extremely viscerally and physically, particularly in those early days where it was just unbelievably shocking. I had a really heavy, like, sensation in my chest that was like it was suffocating, and that was the grief, and that was mixed in with the anger and all of that kind of thing, and the shock of it all. And I think, you know, as you just alluded to, so many times we might turn, you know, try and push it away or deny it or distract ourselves or numb it through alcohol or whatever we do to not, you know, just endlessly watching TV to numb ourselves from the pain that we're experiencing. But like you say, like, there's so much to glean from being able to sit with that emotion and understand it and allow it, like, give it permission to come up and come out and be expressed. Because if we're not able to do that, then it stays kind of trapped inside us, and I really believe it has a detrimental impact on us from the inside out. So although it's painful, I think it's really necessary to kind of go there, and that's not to say that we can do it all the time. I mean, I had to really carve out, you know, because this happened. I mean, my dad's funeral, he died on the 29th of January. We had his funeral on the 25th of February. And then we were straight into COVID pretty much. Well, less than a month later, we went into lockdown, right? So I've been grieving through lockdown with my house full of my family 24/7. And whilst that's been a comfort in many ways, I was also really conscious that I wasn't able to necessarily process the grief and do the things that might have been helpful to me if we hadn't have been locked down. So I had to really consciously create opportunities to go and process the grief and just be with the emotion and just to allow it. So part of that was through having a counsellor. And so I did sessions over a period of weeks and months with her. And I also went to I do a lot of yoga, as you know. So I went to a gong bath, which I'd never done before. And I'd heard a lot about it. And that was unbelievably powerful. And it just, yeah, really brought to life this sense of heaviness that was on my chest. And it became actually suffocating during that hour or hour and a half, however long it was, I forget now. But it was also a really cathartic exercise and something that needed to happen, although it was very difficult in that period of time. I walked out of it feeling a sense of kind of lightness, although it was temporary. But yeah, I really feel it's important to kind of create those moments to sit and just be with the emotion and see what comes up.
It strikes me as, you know, you've had such a, it's this added layer to the grieving process of not having the space even around it during this COVID lockdown to do what maybe are the regular steps. But what I hear and what you're saying is also real creativity in trying to kind of create and carve out, you use that term, carve out the space to be with your grief. And one of the things I really would love for these conversations around death to bring to light, what are some of the tools, the practices, the everyday things we can do that will help us process loss, you know, even small losses, but certainly when we're talking about the loss of a parent or the grief associated with death, you know, it's so great to hear you talk about this. It's a sound bath, am I right?
Yeah, exactly. It's someone playing a gong, and it's basically, it creates an energy in the room that connects with our internal energy flow, and it just, it almost creates like waves of emotion in you. Or it doesn't create it, it draws it out of you almost. And so people have very differing experiences of it. Some people, it just has an immediately a very relaxing effect and people sleep through the whole thing. Other people, it's much more active and a much more active experience, dynamic experience. And that certainly was what it was for me. But yeah, incredibly powerful. And the other thing I did was running. So exercise is really helpful as well, just to kind of, well, yeah, just help you kind of process and expel emotion and anger and or whatever it is that you need to do. But I also used it as an opportunity to connect with my dad. Me and my brother put together a playlist in those very early days after he died, of just all of the songs, and music was so important to my dad. He absolutely loved music. And it was a huge, huge part of his life. So we put together this playlist, and I used to go running and listen to this playlist. And I'd often be running, crying, you know, and shouting a couple of times, and you know, just get letting out the kind of what I was experiencing, because I couldn't do it at home. You know, I've got two young children, and obviously they were grieving as well, and so it was a fine line between wanting to be honest and authentic about my own emotion and what I was feeling having lost my dad, but equally wanting to protect them from the depth of the emotion and the grief that I was feeling. And I think for parents out there who are grieving, that's one of the hardest things, I think, to navigate. Because I wanted to show the children that obviously I felt, you know, unbelievably sad about losing my dad and all of the emotion that comes with that, but equally wanting to protect them from that very harsh reality sometimes. So it's a fine line. But so running was my way to kind of, you know, tick that box of exercising. You know, we were allowed to go out and exercise once a day, so I would go running, stick my headphones in, put that playlist on, and just kind of let it all out. But I also used, I decided to run, I did 60 miles in a month to raise money for mine. So it was almost like that process helped me do what I needed to do to connect with him and just be with the grief. But at the same time, I was doing something for a good cause and raising money for, you know, a mental health charity that helped my dad while he was alive. So it was, there was a sense of purpose, a double-edged sense of purpose in it, I suppose, which I also loved.
Yeah, and I'm struck by how powerful that is, you know, that practice that you created, because it is an embodied practice with the running. The music is this kind of deliberate, intentional, like doorway into our emotions and our feelings. So it's a kind of healing connection to your dad. And then to kind of bring in this purposeful piece, which is about raising awareness. I know that you're championing mental health awareness. You know, just that strikes me as being a really creative and very positive way to take what is a very difficult experience and package it up almost.
It was hugely hugely beneficial. And it's interesting because at some point then, I couldn't tell you when, but at some point during that year I actually stopped listening to the music as much, because I don't know, it just, something shifted, and I just didn't feel, maybe it was that I didn't feel I needed the music to be able to connect with him. It's kind of like that connection has changed. I don't quite know why that is. In those early days, I found it really hard to remember his voice. And I've got, you know, obviously snippets of it from videos and things like that, but it used to really upset me that I couldn't kind of summon, you know, immediately bring back his voice. And actually with time, that has come back. So I now can totally, like, imagine having a conversation with him and all of that's come back. And I kind of put it down to maybe it being to do with the shock of him going so suddenly, that it was almost like everything got kind of numbed a bit. And now it's everything's being reawakened again.
And you're finding those ways to reconnect with that sensory experience. Do you know, it's one of the things I think that I had, that I never realized when my mum passed away, is I had to relearn a way to connect to her that was not based on smell, you know, touch, sight, you know, these senses that so dominate our everyday. They were all just gone. And, you know, I'd seen mum in the run up to her passing away, and it was sudden but not unexpected. She'd been ill for a long time. But it's almost like between, you know, I guess what I understood when she died is how dependent my feelings and memories for her were on those senses. And without those senses, I felt so lost. I felt so untethered. And I've spent the last 12 years to some extent seeking that sense of connection, you know, trying to recreate that sense of being connected to her and being with her, when there is no, you know, visual stimulus, you know. And I've used having photographs. I have a few items of hers. I think this is quite common, but I have a few items of hers that are almost like totems. You know, if I hold on to them I sit with them, it's easier for me to imagine, you know, being a young kid and cuddling up with her on the sofa or something like that. And I love that you talked about music. A couple of years after mum passed away, we were going through some old boxes and I turned up a mixtape that she'd made in 1970, which was just totally awesome. I mean, it had some absolute bangers on it as well. You know, Imagine by John Lennon had come out a few months before she made the mixtape, and that made it onto the mix. And for me, it was a real immediate sense of connection to her, because she was so musical and she was so loved the music, and it's something that we shared together. And you know what,
lovely.
Just what struck me as well is, you know, it, that has faded, that connection through the music has faded in some ways, although there are still songs that are almost a shortcut doorway straight to that connection to my mum. And so I think what's happened over the 12 years is all of the songs don't need to be there, but there's a few that are kind of instantly connect me to her. And, you know, same with Places. Now I've gathered up, I guess, a short list of places, objects, songs, even smells, I guess, although they fade so much quicker, that really bring me back to her. And, you know, in some senses, that's one area that I'm really keen to explore even more, because there's a whole lot of really interesting practices around death, contemplation of death, meditational practices in the Buddhist tradition. There's, you know, in almost every cultural lineage and almost every wisdom tradition, you'll find ways in which practices or tools that have been created to connect us to the dead, you know, and connect us to our grief and our emotions. My experience of those has been they're incredibly powerful, but they can be quite esoteric and difficult for people to, you know, to enter into. You know, I practice a particular form of meditation called Maranasati, which is a Buddhist contemplation of death meditation. I swear by it. I think it's incredible, a really, really powerful practice. But it's not the kind of thing that everyone is going to rock up to and say, yep, I'm just going to dive into this, you know, guided meditation around death. And so I'm particularly interested in these kind of everyday ways in which we can you know, mark and kind of connect to that relationship. Have you got any other examples for you? I mean, you've got the music there, obviously, has been a really powerful one.
Yeah, music, photographs, objects similar to you. I think the other one that I have that's really powerful for me is just a memory of one of them. Well, the last, it was on the last day that I saw him, which was the 1st of January. And I just have this very clear picture of him opening his front door. And he always used to wear bright colored clothing. He used to love bright colors. And he's got, I mean, it's so funny looking back in the photos, there's a particular one that he must have been his absolute favorite because he's almost always in it, which is this rust colored jumper. And he just opened the front door and would say, hello, my darling. And he'd give me this great big hug. And I really, really have a powerful sense of being able to like feel his arms around me still, which is just so lovely and it's kind of lovely and comforting in some ways and then also painful in others. But the thing I have been sort of fearful of recently is I love that image of him, and I love that almost I can see him with his arms outstretched and then, you know, coming to hug me. And I don't want that I don't want that memory to fade. And I don't know who knows whether it will fade or not. I hope if it's something that I revisit often, maybe it will stay with me. But it's not just a kind of visual image of him, with him saying, you know, hello, my darling, but it's also I can really almost feel his arms around me, which is very strange. And I've not had a sensation like that. Well, ever really. So it's very precious. And like I said, it's something I'm fearful of kind of losing, but hopefully that won't happen. So yeah, I suppose that's been the other thing that's helped me to feel that sense of connection.
I just want to say thank you so much for pointing something out that doesn't often get mentioned, which is the fear of losing the memory of the person, losing that sense of connection. I recently had a conversation with my younger sister, and Mum got sick for us when I would have been 8 and my younger sister was 7. And we had this moment, this conversation where we said, you know, we don't have that many really strong memories of Mum before she got sick,
when she was well,
which is almost, you know, which I think when we said it, you know, we both almost looked at each other like, oh my God, that's actually kind of true. And so recently I created a remembrance ritual for me and my siblings. Really, I created it for myself as a way to reconnect and to reconnect to the process of grieving as well, actually, in a way. Over the 12 years, a lot of the grieving has sort of faded away, and there isn't, you know, there's the memories of mum in place, and, you know, some of them are beautiful, and but the depth of the emotion around it wasn't there. And I wanted to reconnect to that emotion, actually. And so I deliberately crafted this ritual as a way to kind of throw myself back in. And as part of the ritual, there's a sort of grounding meditation, and then I invite, because we can't be together at the moment, the thinking behind it was that me and my three siblings could practice the ritual together remotely, at the same time, and sort of, you know, commemorate together, as it were. And part of that ritual was asking, having the photograph of mum, lighting a candle, a remembrance candle. It's called a yahrzeit candle, used in in Jewish tradition to remember the passing of loved ones. And another part of it was to call to mind a particular memory. And I was really clear that I wanted to call to mind a memory of mum from before she got sick, as well. And so I really kind of went back then. Fortunately, I have this, you know, it's amazing, as you were describing your memory of your dad as well. This memory is so vivid. I don't know why it's so vivid. It must, for whatever reason, it really kind of sticks in my mind. And I also remember how I felt, which is just this very light and sort of very fun, sort of giggling almost, which is sitting at the dining room table with my mum. I would have been, I think I probably would have been maybe just turning 8, perhaps still 7. And we were working on a poster for school. Mum was really heavily involved in, like, you know, parent teacher and, you know, really engaged at the schoolyard. She would always be there organizing something, whether it was sports day or whatever it was. And I just remember we had these posters to create for a particular thing. And so I don't think I was being very helpful, to be honest, but I was having so much fun with her trying to paint these posters. And I think for me, it's the coming together of a bunch of different memories in a way. Memories of mum and her creativity, memories of the time that we got to spend together. But it was especially poignant for me to be able to call to mind a memory that was, you know, of mum before she started to get sick, because particularly my relationship with grief is also grieving a very slow loss. Just grieving the not just mum's death, in fact, but also losing her as a mum along the way. So she was always there emotionally. I think, I could never say I didn't have a mum before she passed away, but certainly I was struggling, I think, to come to terms with her pending, you know, death. It was always on the cards, you know. In fact, it's kind of funny to say it, because actually every one of us here, every one of us listening, and Kate, you and I, we both have a death sentence too, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one gets out alive. We know that at some point, you know, we're all bound for the same fate. But, you know, when it was so kind of, you know, when you can hear the clock ticking, that was a very difficult thing to come to terms with as a young child. And so I think in a way, you know, I was already starting the grieving process. I just didn't know that that's what was happening. Mm. But I was already kind of involved in that.
And I'm sure there was probably a sense and questioning wrapped up in there around, you know, why my mum? Why do we have to be different? Why do I, you know, I know for a fact my brother and I have talked about the fact that, you know, my dad had a serious mental illness, which he had was diagnosed in his early 20s. So we always knew him with that. And, you know, we also, whilst he did his absolute best to manage it as best he could, and he had a really keen sense of responsibility as a parent, and he still wanted to maintain his career despite a really debilitating illness. You know, we definitely had times where we felt like, oh, why, you know, why does our dad have to be different? Why do we have to go through this? And, you know, I said this recently to my mum, whilst it was difficult at the time and it wasn't all easy, plain sailing, but then whose life ever is and whose child it ever is. I really think that what we went through growing up and having a dad that was, a little bit different from others, taught us so much. And I think it's made us who we are today. And So I again, it's one of those double-edged swords of it had its dark moments and its difficulties and its challenges, but there was also light and learnings and things that helped us grow into the people that we are. So yeah.
I'm just so struck by, I mean, it's so hard because, you know, I think our cultural understanding of death and dying and grief is so shot through with very negative emotional connotations. You know,
yeah,
the things that we associate with death and dying and grief are sadness, sorrow, depression, anguish. You know, these are really heavy and difficult emotions to process. And yet, yeah. I always say, you know, the fact that Mum had to go through what she went through, and you know, the impact it had on us as a family and on me as an individual, has shaped my life in the most kind of positive ways. I mean, it's created so much of who I am that I can't look at it. I can't look at it through that kind of solely bleak lens, you know. And so for me, I'm so interested in how do we talk about the gifts of grief? How do we open up this conversation around what is culturally still a taboo subject, really? I mean, talking about our feelings around death and grief is still, you know, it's the end of most conversations if you introduce it. And part of my desire with these conversations and my work throughout February talking about this topic and writing about this topic is just for me to personally more deeply explore it, but also hopefully to open up a space where we as a society, you know, can begin to be with grief in a way that we can see some of the positives. Now, you know, no rush, right? We're not rushing ahead of feeling all of the feelings, but for me, I know my constantly calling to mind death and dying through you know what is a weekly practice, it has so many positive benefits, I believe, in my life in terms of you know one area is gratitude. You know, it's mm-hmm. the ultimate kind of gratitude giver. I was recently on a call with a men's group that I'm part of. And the topic for that particular group was freedom. And it was a kind of extended conversation around, you know, our freedom being constrained right now. And, you know, other topics around, you know, should we take the vaccine and things like this, you know, real knotty stuff. And I don't want to dive into that whole territory, but each of us, as is in keeping with how we run our men's group, was given the chance to share for 5 minutes about what this idea of freedom, what do we think about? And I didn't know what I was going to share about. And just when it came to my turn, what struck me so much is, like, for me, freedom is being able to walk. Freedom is waking up in the morning without, you know, a host of different physical constraints that are going to make your day much less likely to be enjoyable. Freedom is, as a young child, freedom is not having to think about your mum not being there. Freedom is, you know, looking at your dad and, you know, I guess in a way, I'm sure maybe he had these thoughts too, but looking at him and saying, you know, maybe he doesn't want to be a full-time carer. This probably isn't what he had in mind for himself and for his relationship with mum too. So, for me, I was really struck by how, you know, mum's experience and the experience that we had as a family, as you so beautifully put it, it's a different experience. That has given me the gift of understanding, like, having health is such a luxury. Right? And when you don't have it, I mean, that is, you know, all bets are off if you don't have, you know, either your physical or your mental health. And, you know, even 12 years on, you know, I'm continually surprised by the gifts that the experience I've had. I never, you know, if you'd asked me when I was 8 years old, do you want to choose this experience? The obvious answer is no, thank you very much. I'd like my mum to be around for forever. And I certainly don't want to think about this now. And yet I now feel like there were so many gifts to be given. Gratitude is just one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what it does and what you're talking to there is it sharpens the focus, like grief and loss sharpens the focus around what really is important to us in life. And just what really at the end of the day matters. And I think, you know, when you have something taken away, and you know, your example of freedom there is a good one, because that's what we've all had taken away from us in one way or another through COVID. And lots of people therefore have realized, oh my gosh, I totally didn't appreciate all that I had. So, you know, and obviously we're grieving collectively through COVID, both the loss of life and, you know, friends and family that have gone, but also for the things that we've lost from our everyday. But I think it is also sharpening the focus on, well, actually, what of those things that we've lost really do matter? And do I need everything that I thought I needed? So for me, that is a fundamental gift of going through that process of losing something, is that it allows you to weigh up how important it was to you in the first place.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And along with that sharpening or zeroing in on what really matters, I'd love to come back to what I feel is, you know, I'm a dad, and I'd love to talk a little bit about how, whether it's appropriate, first of all, and also how might we, you know, bring our children up in such a way that gives them some of these gifts. Or can we even do that, right? Can we even hope to do that? Because the gift we were given is perhaps not a gift we'd like to give to our kids, if you see what I mean.
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. Well, yeah, it's, I think my answer to that, and I don't profess to have the right answer by any stretch, but I suppose my experience of going through it with two young children was that I wanted them, you know, it's back to what I said earlier, I wanted them to see me being emotional, and I wanted them to see my husband being emotional, and because I wanted them to understand like the depth of the love that we felt and the fact that we are a family and family life has changed and Grampy isn't around anymore. And, you know, so I wanted to respect the fact and be honest with them about the fact that life has changed. But then I also was really keen to talk to them about, just because life has changed and we can't see or hug or talk to Grampy anymore, we can still keep his memory alive. And that doesn't mean that he's gone forever, because we can keep him alive through the memories and the stories that we share. And so that's something, and you know, we got books. There's lots of wonderful children's books that have been written to help children understand and stuff, you know, process grief. And so we did a lot of those. And I mean, again, it was a journey for me trying to read these stories when I was still in the depths of emotion. I would cry trying to read them to them. And, you know, and I think sometimes they would, you know, they'd sort of wouldn't say much, and they'd be kind of, you know, are you okay, mummy? And I would make a point of kind of crying for a bit, and then I would stop the crying and I would say, I'm fine, it's past. You know, and that's what emotion is. It kind of comes and goes in waves. And I really wanted, I think it's our responsibility as parents to model a connectedness with our emotions and a willingness to show them, because otherwise, if we're constantly going through life shoving our emotions away, what are we telling our kids? Like, it's not okay to cry, it's not okay to be sad. I was really keen to kind of embrace and recognize and be with all of the emotion and really clearly show them that you can be 1 minute in the depths of real sadness and crying, but on the next minute you can kind of wipe away your tears and actually have a happy thought and go to a happy memory of times that you spent together. So yeah, that was, I don't know, that's what it's been like for me. And my children, you know, my eldest is 6, and he now has his own journal where he writes, you know, what he feels sometimes, or draws pictures at least. He seems to be more into drawing the pictures about it. But that's kind of been the way that we've done it, is trying to embrace all the emotions that come with going through a grieving process, but really focusing on the kind of, okay, yeah, life has changed, and it's not the same as it was, but that doesn't mean it has to be worse, and we can still keep the memory of somebody alive. And we're often, you know, around the dinner table, talk about Grampy and laugh about funny things that he said, or, you know, I tell them stories from our childhood, and they often ask, they say, can we hear a story about Grampy? So I think it's important for both them, and I love the fact that they ask and still talk about him pretty much daily.
And I you know what I love about that, Kate, is that you're creating, you're normalizing grief as part of life, not as something that's getting in the way of living the life that you want, but it's just a natural part of life. We can be with these emotions, and they don't have to, you know, consume us and completely overwhelm us. And I love that you with your eldest, you know, the journaling, creating these spaces, not just for grief, but just for all emotion. You know, that strikes me as, and I agree, I think it's a responsibility of parents. And that word's a difficult one to use, because every parent's at a different stage in their journey, and they're struggling in their own unique and particular ways. But finding these opportunities to connect emotionally with our children, I think is massively important. I was asked a question the other day, actually, and it was I was in conversation with my brother, and we'd been doing this remembrance ritual, and he spoke about how he was sort of in bits about it. He was in tears, in floods, I think he described it, and then talked about how mum might be feeling, looking down on us. So I think he might have used those words. And then this is something that I often come back to, actually, is this, it's almost like a curiosity. I would love to, you know, I think it's that desire to have that conversation again, you know, say to mum, like, oh, what do you make of this? And I find, you know, there's a poignancy when something positive or even negative happens in my life. I'm so fortunate to have a supportive, an amazing wife and wonderful son and great close family and friends to whom I can take all sorts of things, but there still remains this kind of piece where I would just love to be able to sit down with my mum and sort of bring her up to speed on how things are going and what's happening. So what I've taken to doing is, and it's a very kind of ad hoc thing, I haven't made it a regular practice, but just every now and then I'll find myself sort of just sitting down and having a natter to her. And almost like I'm just calling her on the weekend and saying, oh, this week's been a bit like this, and this is the stuff that's been going on. And I found that to be hugely beneficial. I mean, sitting on my own upstairs, having a natter to my mum, has just been a great opportunity for me to feel like there's still those conversations that I can have. And I guess, you know, I'm struck. I wonder, you know, what do you think your dad's, what would you love to update your dad on at the moment, Kate?
I've been struck recently just by, I'd love to be able for him to be able to see the children, like my children growing up. And he got so much pleasure from having grandchildren. He couldn't, he would manage it in sort of short, sharp bursts, because of his illness and what he was kind of coping with daily. It was sort of like, you know, once we'd been together for a few hours, it was kind of, he was ready to go, and, you know, that was it. But in the time that he was with us, we would have, you know, just such lovely times. And he was always so, he would sit with each of them and do a jigsaw puzzle, or he'd do read a book, or, you know, he'd play a game, spend some one-to-one time with each of them, just to kind of, you know, be grumpy and hear about them. And you know, they're obviously that bit older now, and they're each, you know, really growing into their characters. And I just, and my son in particular, I mean, he is so like looks wise just looks a lot like my dad. And in a, you know, and so I'm sort of almost, he is my daily reminder, like his hair only comes from my dad, because there's no one else in the family either side that has hair like my son and my dad. So yeah, it's I still regularly have those pangs of just, I wish, you know, he could see who they are and who they're becoming as people. And I think he would be immensely he would just be delighted and also very proud and loving. And yeah, I think that's the, and that's, you know, that's where I also feel the frustration, because he wanted to live and he wanted, you know, he was having some physical health problems off the back of his treatment, his daily medication for his mental health. And so he was managing the transition to onto a different form of medication so that it had less of a serious impact on his physical health. And, you know, that's where it all went wrong. But there was no, you know, there were no warning signs. And so that's where it's just, I get these pangs of frustration of, I wish he was still here to see all of this. And then, oh, I can't believe he's not. So it's something I'm still very much wrangling with, I suppose.
Yeah. And I suspect that will stay. That will stay for however long it needs to stay, you know.
Yeah.
Mum, you know, I reflected with my younger sister, because I think Mum's first grandchild was born, I think, 6 days after she passed away, or 5 days after right. she passed away. And so yeah. there's a sort of collective feeling of, well, actually, it's still very painful to me. We talk a lot about my mum, Omi, but Marshall never met her. And so while the stories, you know, he loves to hear the stories and, you know, he'll sometimes ask about her, that sense of a kind of deeper connection, that physical thing, was never there for him. And so I guess I'm scared that, you know, I won't be able to really help him have that sense of connection to his Omi. But you know, I'm also, you know, on the flip side, really grateful. Marshall has wonderful grandparents on my wife's side. And my dad is still around, and so he has a great relationship. In fact, my dad sent him a letter the other day, which was really sweet, and Marshall was really struck by it. And I guess, you know, how fortunate Marshall is. He's got three fantastic grandparents who love him to bits and want to play a part in his life. And he actually, you know, he still has a great grandfather who, you know, who is alive and very healthy and with it, and loves to spend time with Marshall too when we get to Canada. So, you know, I'm conscious of how fortunate he is to have his grandparents. And, you know, like you said, the frustration is still there that he never had the chance to know his Omi.
I wonder whether he will infer anything from, you know, from the relationships he has with the remaining grandparents, and coupled with then the stories that you bring about your mum. I wonder whether he'll be able to infer more, you know, about his grandmother in that way.
Yeah, and I like you, I take time to sort of tell stories about his Omi, and often talk about my relationship to her, and you know, how I feel now she's gone. And the benefit of the 12 years having passed is there is often less emotionality there, so it's easier for me to talk about missing her without it becoming a very very painful experience for me. And at the same time, I'm always, you know, conscious that, you know, he has the gift of life. He has the gift of not having to worry about somebody being sick or passing away imminently. And I want him to kind of have that gift as well. So it's always trying to strike this balance between, you know, focusing too much on our impermanence, which, although it's a gift, it's not where you want to spend your everyday moments.
No, also, of course.
You know, and you know, to some, we've just been talking, we have a cat. And the cat has been a bit sore recently in the hip, and my wife and I were talking, and like, oh my goodness, what would happen if, you know, Pusheen the cat was sick, and, you know, something were to happen, Marshall would be devastated. And I remember, you know, losing pets as a child, and how difficult that was, and also, you know, perhaps how some of these smaller losses, you know, albeit they can feel very large, allow us to almost dress rehearse some of the emotional stuff that we go through with the bigger losses. And so I think there's a real value in that.
Yeah, it's like preparation for something bigger, because it will, you know, nobody, like you said, nobody is immune to death. And also, you know, I haven't met many people who haven't gone through some sort of major event in their life, and particularly now, given what's happened with COVID, I think so many more people are feeling such a keen sense of loss. So I do think those having, you know, those other experiences of low, you know, sort of low key or lower level grief and loss are important. And I just think, yeah, I think what you're talking to is important around, it's a really, I feel almost like it's a tightrope between exposing children to the realities of life, but not doing it in so much that we then kick off a whole train of kind of worry and anxiety that mean that they can't sleep at night for fear of, you know, who's going to die next and am I going to die? So it's a real, for me, it kind of, I think the value that it sort of triggers in me is one around, I really believe in being as authentic as possible. I've been called in my life over emotional and a fire hydrant and all this kind of thing, because I don't have a problem with sharing my emotion and letting people know how I feel. And I think when you have a tendency towards, you know, being able to be emotional in front of others, it's like, when is enough and when is it too much? And, you know, whilst it's important to me to be authentic and honest about how I'm feeling, I don't want it to trigger other people or create like say anxiety or worry in the children. So it's a fine balance and like I say, a tightrope to walk. But I feel like, yeah, it's an important, to me personally, it's really important to teach my children to how to be with emotion and how to recognize emotion and how to kind of allow it to come out and not be ashamed of it.
Absolutely. I, growing up, I was somebody that was told not to be so emotional and not to be too sensitive. But as it turns out, it's largely been a superpower in my life.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I sense, I'd be interested in your view on this, Kate. I sense that there's more scope now, perhaps more than ever, for people to be present for their emotions. That feels like a conversation that we're more ready to have now than perhaps even when we were kids.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the reason it is important for us to be able to be with our own emotion is because if we can't be with our own emotion, then how can we expect to ever be with anybody else when they're feeling emotional? And experiencing emotion. So, you know, we've all had probably experiences where someone has just sort of cried unexpectedly on us, or we've asked a question and it's hit a nerve and maybe it's resulted in anger or something like that. And then it's almost like, oh my gosh, what do I do? I'm with someone with who's being emotional. How do I handle this? What's the best thing to do? And often we kind of reassure, we give loads of platitudes of, oh, you'll be all right. Oh, you'll find a way. It'll be okay. And it's like, that's not actually giving sort of recognition and respect to what they're experiencing, just kind of trying to smooth it over and gloss over it and almost like, oh, here's a tissue, dry your eyes, like it'll be fine. So it's kind of learning to be with emotion ourselves and to be able to express it and process it and understand it enables us to hold space and be with other people. And actually sometimes maybe it isn't like saying anything, maybe it's just to sit in silence and allow that person to have a good cry and feel that it's not like shameful or that there's something that they should be guilty of. Like just to sit in silence could be the thing that they need.
I love where we're at in this conversation, because it's a really, I think, you know, it speaks to another a side of grief, right? Which is the person going through the experience, right? The person who is experiencing the loss, whatever that loss is, for them, it's a visceral, often life-changing experience. And it is too for the people around that person. I feel like sometimes, you know, our unwillingness to be with death as a concept, you know, to contemplate our own mortality, to even think about grieving, extends to the people that aren't directly impacted by the loss. But so I wanted to ask, from your experience, what's been some of the great ways that people's that people have been there for you in your own grief, and you know, kind of extended from that, what advice might you have for people who are supporting those going through the loss of someone close to them?
It's a really good question. It's something, again, that I've been sort of trying to make mental notes of as I've been experiencing it, and writing things down as well, because I don't want to forget this experience, because I want to be able to pass on this. And I think the biggest thing in those early days was just people being there and listening, and not trying to smooth over, because you couldn't, in, you know, we just, it couldn't be smoothed over. What the way that my dad died, and the immediacy of it was just utterly horrendous and shocking. So there wasn't really anything anybody could say. And so the best thing that people did was just allow me to tell, say what happened, and to explain it all. And almost like that process for me going, because we were really trying to piece together what had happened. Like, it wasn't clear how he'd come to die. And so for us, it was kind of big piece of piecing together the bits of the jigsaw, and me verbalizing that to other people and saying what we understood and what questions we still had and all of that kind of thing was really helpful to me, because it helped me make some sense of it in my own mind, or even if it didn't make sense, because some of it still doesn't and it never will. It was a coming to terms with it, and almost the act of verbalizing it made it more real. And made it, you know, in those moments where I just couldn't believe it, the act of verbalizing it and going through the story, just it was kind of a process of my body and my mind registering what had happened. So I think that was the first thing, is just friends that and family who were able to just allow me to tell what was a clearly very difficult story that I was sobbing through and probably talking through gritted teeth about. And they were just holding, they were just on the other end of the phone, just being, allowing me to do that and not trying to fix it or anything. And then, so that's the first big one. And then the others are just little thoughtful touches, to be honest, that just were things that would make my life easier. So one friend came round with a load of, you know, cook meals, and just was like, you know, don't think about cooking, don't think about any of that stuff, just here, put all of this in the freezer and get this out each day, and just, you know, don't worry about any of that side of things. And then there were friends that came to the funeral and bought, like, not that it's about buying things necessarily, but it was more about what that said. They bought me a whole load of bath products and just, you know, things to help me relax and help me sleep. So there was like a lavender sleep spray and a body oil, lavender body oil, things like that. Just kind of, you know, they were trying in their own way to understand what I would be going through, like what I might be struggling with, sleep and relaxation. And so just kind of trying to do what they could to encourage those kind of nurturing self-care routines, I suppose.
I'm struck there. You know, you said in the quote, you know, the quote that I read at the top of the hour, where you spoke about, you know, more authentic connection with friends and family. I think, you know, in this moment we're sort of cracked open, and it's where you know, that capacity for real heartfelt, heart to heart connection is there at that moment.
Yes. There was a real, I kind of wanted to be seen in those moments. I wanted to allow people to see the heartache and the pain. And in some way it was mixed up with wanting to honor my dad. It was almost like I had to be seen in all of my raw, messy emotion, because that was kind of, that was the impact of losing him, and you know, the impact that he had on me as a dad, and all of those amazing lessons he taught me about, you know, life is what you make it, and, you know, not to kind of get sucked into victim mentality. You know, he's battled every single day against a really seriously debilitating mental illness, but you would never have known it. Most people would never have known it. Because he fought so hard to maintain as normal as possible a life for him and for us as his kids. So there was something in like wanting that all to be seen, and the power of that loss that was almost like honoring him in some way. I don't, yeah, maybe that makes no sense as I'm saying, it, but that's how it felt at the time, you know.
What I'm really struck by is the courage mm. that when you spoke about your dad and what he battled with and what he fought with his whole life, the courage required for him to keep going in that way and to honor that, you were showing courage by being there to have the full experience of this event, right? Not to numb yourself to the emotion, but to really let it in, to surrender to it in some way, is a way to honor his own courage.
I think that's exactly it. Thank you for giving nice clean words to my rambling.
well last month, January, was all about courage, and it felt appropriate to bring some of it in. We're at the hour, Kate, and there's a natural moment for me to first of all just say a huge thank you. It takes a tremendous amount of courage to come on to a call like this, no structure, no determined questions that I've sent you in advance, and just be open to a discussion on a topic that isn't easy to discuss and is often not welcome to discuss. So I just wanted to say a massive thank you for helping to create this space where we could talk openly about this.
Well, no, thank you. I mean, I totally agree with you. I think it would be wonderful if we could be more open and willing to explore this difficult subject. So no, I mean, thank you for the invitation to come on and talk about it. And I love the fact that there wasn't any structure to it. I was actually, funnily enough, listening to a podcast whilst running this morning, all about like the beauty of not having structure, and you know, while structure helps us to feel secure in so many ways and gives us that sort of temporary sense of control, what it can also close down is creativity, spontaneity, freedom. So I hope that's what we've got some of here today.
Kate, thank you so much. Go well. Before I sign off, I wanted to just say, if any of the conversation that we've had today has left any listeners feeling triggered or in any other way struggling emotionally, I'd like to just say on Twitter, I'm Scott_Drummond. Please feel free to reach out to me there. I'm happy to talk to you privately, to talk about your experience of death and grief, and just to know that this topic is open for us to discuss, and that you're not alone in whatever you're dealing with. But please do reach out to other people and talk about what you're going through. Kate, thank you so much. I look forward to us catching up when the pandemic is all over. And in the meantime, I wish you strong connection to your wonderful dad. And thank you again.
Lovely. Thank you. And you to your mum, Scott.